Kent Online News.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online Podcast. Nicola Everett.
Hello, hope you're okay. Thanks ever so much for downloading today's podcast. It's Wednesday, June the 10th. First on today's episode, a Kent man who was sent to prison after being prosecuted by the post office is trying to clear his name after hearing about the Horizon scandal. Now, Simon Edgecombe was convicted after selling a van to a staff member in Rainham who took money from the till back in 1983. The idea was for company bosses to cover the cost, but despite having invoices and paperwork, both Simon and the girl working there were charged and eventually jailed. The now 71-year-old who lives in Tenham is trying to appeal his case and spoke to reporter Kristin Hawthorne.
I don't think I ever believed we were going to prison because it was such a ridiculous charge and there was no proof to it either. So it was a foregone conclusion. We were going to walk out of court. I think the only time I realised was actually when the judge said, you will go to prison for 12 months and the girl will go to prison for 6 months.
And how has that affected you since then?
Oh, enormously. If anybody can ever imagine being accused of something, even being accused of something is bad enough that you didn't do. But to be accused of something you didn't do with so little alleged evidence, and then to have lost a year of your life, and bearing in mind my mother died while I was in prison, so that makes it even worse. And at this current time, I've lost my mother, my father, my sister, my brother. There is no one left for me to prove this to, but that's not going to stop me. What drives me on is making sure not only if I can prove my innocence, but if I can prove my innocence, then I can find that girl who worked in the sub-post office, and if I win, she wins. She doesn't know about this yet, she knows nothing of it at all, but I'm, shall we say, protecting her from the distress of suddenly having to relive events of 43 years ago. So I owe it to her as well to prove this was all lies and a set-up case by post office. As has been shown with post office investigations, they suit themselves. They only want a prosecution. I was asked to plead guilty by post office because that would save me going to prison. Now that is a story that's been told to nearly everybody with the Horizon and Capture scandals. Plead guilty, stop you going to prison. I would love for the court to find all the paperwork, but from the information I am told by the court, at that time post office had the right to retain all court documentation. You can put your own story to why that would be, but bearing in mind this was prosecuted, investigated by post office. There was no outside involvement at all. And since then, they have blamed everybody. They even blamed CPS. They wrote to me and told me it was CPS. CPS told me they didn't even exist in 1983. So where did that come from? Then they said it was the police, and the police have written to me and told me it's nothing to do with them either. Then they blamed the sub-postmaster and said it was him. But the indictment was actually in the name of Regina, which is the Crown. So they have tried to distance themselves from this all the way along. So I hope that there will be somebody perhaps who worked at the court at the time. They can find a stenographer's report, perhaps even a member of the jury. You know, I'm hoping a member of the jury, I was probably expecting a bit much for it to stick in their mind word for word, but I need some form of evidence that what I am saying and what I said to the Court of Appeal is actually true, that it's not just me. Now, whilst the Court of Appeal, I think, expressed that they believed me and could see exactly what I was saying was very likely true, it's difficult for a court of appeal to actually overrule a court direction with no evidence from the other side. Post office have even objected to my appeal, yet they admit they don't know what it's about. But they've still objected to it, but that apparently is commonplace with post offices.
Simon's local MP, Helen Whateley, is supporting his campaign. A spokesperson for the post office says there's no evidence that it led the prosecution and it has no paperwork on the matter.
Kent Online News.
Other top stories today, an abandoned driver who left two people seriously injured following a crash on Sheppey has been sent to prison. Luke Wells fled the scene after the car he was driving hit another vehicle on Queenborough Road in Halfway in July 2024. The 31-year-old from Lapwing Close in Minster admitted causing serious injury by dangerous driving and has been locked up for 3 years and 10 months. A Dartford man who admitted pestering a woman and grabbing her hair on a train has avoided being sent to prison. David Stroud is the first person in the country to be sentenced under new harassment laws based on a person's sex. The 44-year-old from Halcrow Avenue had been on bail for a stalking offence at the time and was handed a 12-month community order. A search is underway to find a young mum from Tunbridge who's gone missing in France. 28-year-old Lucy Stemp travelled to Brest in the west of the country for a festival but hasn't been heard from for more than a week. Kent Police say they're liaising with international agencies and her family are urging anyone with information to get in touch. Now, the Kent Online podcast has been told a major shake-up of the fire service in Kent is about making sure resources are in the right place and can respond to new risks. Bosses are looking at closing 5 standalone on-call stations and removing similar sections from 4 other parts of the county. Money from the sale of any stations that do close will be reinvested back into emergency training and kit, that sort of thing. Well, Anne Millington is the chief exec of Kent Fire and Rescue Service. She's been explaining to us in a bit more detail about the plans.
We've got about kind of 4 key problems in reality, of which the money is the least. I think people think this is just about financial cuts, and it isn't. What we're trying to do is affect having a better daytime cover. So we have more incidents during the day, and actually our availability is better at night, because that's when we have our on-call or part-time stations, so to speak, come on in the night. So we're trying to create a package where some of our fire engines at night are moved into the daytime. And also some of the resources that we've got in areas that don't have the same kind of demand now are moved into a different place. So to be specific about our on-call stations, for instance, we've got great people doing great work. That's really not the issue. And in fact, we want to keep them. But in effect, much less demand, considerably less demand in certain areas. Obviously, the areas that we're proposing that we have closures. And then that has a couple of problems. Firstly, it means that we can't keep people with the same level of training. There's only so much training you can do outside actually having the experience. So, and then that means that we have concerns about firefighter safety itself, because in effect, if you're really not going to fires that much anymore, you're not doing it. It also means that where we've got things like road traffic collisions, which are more in the day at peak times, we want to be able to make sure we have resource again in the daytime that give us that kind of cover. So in overall terms, we're trying to affect a better use of our resources, which are limited and have been cut, to be fair, by about £2 million from between government and the costs going up and so on, and then spread that in a very different way. So they're closing, yeah, and we know that that is so emotional for people, but we're wanting to avoid compulsory redundancy, keep those skills, and then use it in a different way. Because the last thing I'd say, Nicola, is that we've also, the nature of the risk is changing, and that's one of the other big areas. So where, coming out of the war, for instance, and you know, when on-call started, you tended to get more small fires, chip pans, for people who remember chip pans, all of that. Nowadays, we're seeing more wildfires, more climate change issues around, you know, sudden floods where there's been dry ground, waste recycling plants where people have got more lithium-ion batteries that are going into waste recycling. So you're needing to have people work in a different way. So one of the things we're creating is something called an annualized contract. So rather than having people who have to be within 5 minutes of their station, one of the offers we're making to those people who are affected is that they change the nature of their contract. So we use them more in the summer, for instance, when we get more fires. So it's quite a complex picture to try and describe, because we're trying to actually improve productivity a lot. But of course, what people focus on is the sense of the cut.
You mentioned there about compulsory redundancies, but I have to ask, will there be any voluntary redundancies? Is that going to be made an option?
We're making it an offer. So there are seven different options that we're offering, and we've got slightly different shades of contract. So some of our whole-time firefighters also work in on-call stations. So we're offering them either they can take voluntary redundancy, and we've got some people who've worked for 20 years or something, maybe coming to their late 50s. So we'll also pay their pension strain and their voluntary redundancy money, and some will find that very attractive. We've also then got some who may still want to do what we're calling this annualised contract. So that is something we'll discuss. We also know that we've got colleagues who join on call because they very much want to come into whole time. So we're literally ring fencing those colleagues and say they will have the first chances to now come through an assessment over the summer and then be able to make sure that they can come into whole time. And that will be attractive to the people who've done exactly that. And then there are some other options then about other things that we're trying to do without going through the whole list. And of course, people to a degree are going to feel reluctant about doing those options at the moment, in the hope that the station doesn't close. But obviously, we haven't put the case forward on the basis that we think they won't close. On the whole, we do think that they need to. But the consultation is meaningful. When we did this 14 years ago, there was one station that we were suggesting for closure that then didn't close. So it's a very meaningful consultation, at the same time as trying to make sure that colleagues have some certainty if their station is closing. So it's a difficult balancing act, of course.
A 12-week consultation is due to get underway later this month.
Kent Online reports.
Bosses at a Kent hospital say a review is underway following a complaint from the family of a woman who died after delays in having an MRI scan. Sylvia Rowe was taken to Darent Valley in Dartford in February with sudden leg pain, but was kept in for more than 5 weeks. The 87-year-old passed away in March from a respiratory disease and hospital-acquired pneumonia. A Rochester woman who was diagnosed with breast cancer at the age of just 28 is urging people to listen to their bodies if they're dismissed by doctors. Selena Moss-Davis went to her GP after finding a lump, but was told to keep an eye on it. She's been speaking to Lucy.
15 years ago, 2011, I was 28 at the time. Around March, I'd come across a lump, sizable enough to feel it, but not huge. Had it kind of checked with the GP, wasn't too concerned, kind of keep an eye on it, which to me was like, yeah, fine, nothing to worry about. Probably within a few weeks, it got significantly bigger. My mum sort of bizarrely was aware of it and picked up at the size just from, sounds crazy, she'd hug me in the position it was in. She felt it, so she was adamant that I see someone again. I was busy. I had a very busy job at the time. I was traveling quite a bit with work, so I felt like it was just an annoyance, to be honest, to even go back to a GP. At 28, you don't really think there's anything sinister happening. So I did. I went back to see a different GP. She was great. She referred me immediately. Again, no red flags, no concerns. I went to the Peggy Wood breast unit at Maidstone Hospital, had it checked, had a biopsy, which kind of concerned me at the time, but again, no red flags, nothing to be concerned about. And then a week later, yeah, I kind of walked into a room. I'd say right up until the last minute, I had zero concern. There was kind of no, I'd like to say I was worried, or I kind of felt there was something off. No, not at all. So it was huge shock. I sort of sat with my mum, fortunately, was there. I sat with Mr. Devalier, my surgeon, who's still part of my team to this day, my breast care nurse Anna, and he delivered the news, and he said, I'm really sorry, it's breast cancer. Not at all what I was expecting. Those first, I'd say 10, 15, 20 minutes in, I can't even tell you what I was doing, if I was crying. It's just a complete, an utter, it was just shock. It was awful. And I think, again, it's just at 28 years old, it's not what you expect. It's not even something I'd heard of anybody else really going through at 28.
Yeah, and it's scary to think what could have happened if your mum hadn't urged you to go and get a second check, because you
Oh,
had
yeah.
been told, you know, just keep an eye on it. You know, obviously you've had surgery and recovering and everything, but it might not have been that simple.
No. You know, you have youth, you're doing all the things you want to be doing at 28. You do not think, after you've seen the GP, that, okay, you know, going to a GP at that age is an annoyance. It's not something you want to do. You don't have time for it, really. So, yeah, I still think about that a lot. Had she have not, you know, you try not to, but had she have not sort of forced me, and I say forced because she did, she even made the appointment. So on my behalf, and was like, you know, I think I've been in Barcelona with work and I landed. She was like, text message, there's an appointment tomorrow, you have to go. Like, okay, I'm going. So yeah, and it happens, and it still happens. You know, I speak to countless women where a lot of GPs, you know, and it's not a blight on GPs, they're doing the best they can, but I think it's still not a red flag for a young woman to have a lump in their breast. It's not the first thing they think about or try to eliminate.
Yeah, it's frightening to think, isn't it? Because, you know, you assume you go to the GP, they know what's best, they're going to kind of give you the best advice, and that's that. But it's worrying that that's still kind of happening even 15 years after your experience.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I think it's probably a bit of a cliche, but it's knowing your body. It's knowing what feels right and what's persistent. You know, that lump grew in size, and they don't all necessarily grow as fast as mine did. But I think if it's there and it's hanging around, or if you just don't feel comfortable about it, you have a right to get that checked. You have a right to kind of be a bit forceful and say, actually, I would like to speak to somebody again about this. Because it's, you know, you're not a nuisance. It's important that these things are checked. And properly checked.
Selena's now supporting Cancer Research UK's Race for Life events happening this summer. A spinathon is taking place later in memory of a teenager from Faversham who died following an outbreak of meningitis. Juliet Kenny passed away in March, just 24 hours after falling ill. Colleagues from McNaid are cycling the equivalent distance to Verona, raising money for the Meningitis Research Foundation.
Kent Online reports.
Plans to build new homes on prime farmland in New Romney have been described as another nail in the coffin for the Kent countryside. Developers have set out proposals for 110 properties off Cockreed Lane. A local councillor's vowing to fight the scheme following concerns over the impact on infrastructure and green space. Meantime, plans for a huge new housing development near Maidstone have taken a step forward. 5,000 homes are due to be built on an 800-acre plot of land between Lenham and Charing Heath. A report on the environmental impact has now been submitted to the council ahead of an official planning application. Community groups are being given the chance to take over the running of 8 windmills in Kent. The County Council say they want to ensure the structures are maintained for future generations. Mills in Chillenden, Margate and Stelling Minnis are among those that could get new owners. Next on today's episode, and a woman who started a book share after moving to Margate is hoping similar ones will be set up across the country. The campaign, which is led by the Department for Education and National Literacy Trust, is about reversing a decline in reading for pleasure. Bees Bookshare was founded in 2012 and has already expanded across East Kent. Bryony Bishop has been telling me all about it.
When I moved here 16 years ago, I couldn't find a book club to join, so I decided to set one up. But I'm a bit of a stickler for not wanting to have deadlines outside of work, so I didn't really want to read a set text. So I created Bees Bookshare, which is where anyone can turn up with any book, whether they've loved it or loathed it, couldn't get into it, couldn't put it down. And then we talk about it, and it provides a really rich conversation, because you're talking about lots of different books and it inspires you to read different things.
And how would you say it's developed over that time? I'm sure you've got loads of more people getting involved. Has it become a real community?
It really has, and it's really It's been really wonderful, actually, personally, but also the friendships that have formed through Bookshare. So, for example, I have a couple who of people that became friends who now share an allotment. You know, people go to writing and journaling groups together, or they've just become friends and go out having a giggle and enjoying the nightlife together. So it's been really wonderful. And just through that joint pleasure of reading, really, and just discovering that passion at any age and at any time in your life, and then coming together just to talk about it, have a cup of coffee, have some cake, you know, the very best accompaniments for reading.
And how vital do you think at the moment? I mean, we can just turn on the telly or the radio and hear a lot of doom and gloom about what's going on in the world. How vital is that escapism, do you think, right now, just to go into a completely different world that someone else has maybe created, whether that's, you know, mystery or whatever? How important do you think that is at this particular moment in time?
I think it's absolutely vital. I mean, bibliotherapy is a word for a reason, and that's actually what got me reading for pleasure. I was a bit of a reluctant reader. I was able and capable to read quite well, but as a child, I didn't want to have my head in books, whereas my family did. And it was only when I was 19 and pretty stressed out at university that my dad said, "Why don't you pick up a fiction book rather than your books that you're studying?" And it was an escape, and it was a way to de-stress. And actually, I still practice that all the time. So I begin my day with a 20-minute read. So I get my first cup of tea, and I get up earlier so that I can have 20 minutes reading. And then I bookend my day and read for 20 minutes before bed. So it can come at any point in your life, and it can be really, really powerful way to offset anything else that's going on for your life or around the world.
I believe Bees Bookshare is expanding. Is that right? You're going into other areas as well.
Yeah, so through the National Year of Reading, what we're hoping to do is inspire other people, whether that's across Kent and across the nation, to set up their own Bookshare. So I'll be creating a toolkit and that people can download from the website to give them some tips and guidance. But what we'd love is for anybody and everybody to do their own thing. And during this National Re Year of Reading, it's really a moment to kick start kind of that reading for pleasure for, you know, as long as you want it to be, and hopefully for the rest of your lifetime.
And finally, a Kent school celebrating after a year six class was named the funniest in Britain. Boyce class at Joy Lane Primary in Whitstable has won a competition by Beano to find the best joke. Here it is then. I didn't think food could make calls, but then boom, onion rings. It got more than a third of the national vote.
Kent Online Sport.
Cricket and Kent have suffered their second defeat in a row in the T20 Blast. They were beaten by 3 runs after failing to reach their victory target of 187 in Chelmsford. That's despite a half century by captain Sam Billings. On to football, and England will have to go through the playoffs to qualify for the Women's World Cup. They beat Ukraine 3-0 in their final group game with an assist from Kent's Alessia Russo, but it wasn't enough to secure automatic qualification as Spain topped the table with a 6-1 hammering of Iceland. And plans to upgrade facilities at a top golf club in Kent have been given the go-ahead. Royal St George's in Sandwich has hosted the prestigious Open Championship 15 times, most recently in 2021. There'll be a new greenkeeping area with a machinery store, storage bays and water tanks, along with car parking for staff. Well, that's all from us for today. Thanks ever so much for listening. Don't forget you can follow us on socials. Plus, you can get details on the top stories direct to your email each morning via the briefing. To sign up to that, just head to kentonline.co.uk, and whilst on the website, you can also subscribe to Kent Online Premium. That gives you access to content with fewer ads and exclusive stories.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online Podcast.